Welcome to the Sharedcare Scotland podcast. You're listening to a talk given as part of the Creative Break conference series recorded on the 16th of November 2011. This talk is by Dr. Joe Gibson, Outdoor Activities Coordinator with Sense Scotland.
Thank you very much, Sylvie, and thank you for inviting me to speak here today. I'm sorry I wasn't able to be here this morning, but I had to fly up from London first thing and there was no earlier flight. And I was surprised when I got here to see how much of the stands and how much of the displays was about the outdoors. So I spent the rest of the time after lunch rewriting my talk. So I apologise if what I talk about doesn't match exactly with the slides that I've got prepared. But I know one of the themes has been risk, so I'm going to take a bit of a risk and go off my original talk a bit. I'm going to start off by talking a bit. I'll just tell you a bit about me, where I come from. I started off working at another one of the Adventure for All centres, like Sylvie's involved with, the Badagooishes, down in Cornwall at Churchdown Farm. And then I did a degree in outdoor education. And then in 1997, I started to work for Sense Scotland, which is working with people with congenital rubella and deafblind and other complex multiple disabilities. And I started as a night shift worker, just as a way to fund while I was doing my research. Through that process, I changed my research to look at people who are deafblind taking part in outdoor activities. Partly that was a practical decision because there was nothing written about that at all. And I thought, I've got to find something new. Anything I find will be new. So it's much easier to find something new when no one's done anything before. And then more recently, I got the job as the Outdoor Activities Coordinator for Sense Scotland, which is a bit of a misnomer because I am the outdoor department. It's me in Scotland. So I drive all around Aberdeen and Dundee. So that gives you an idea of where I'm coming from. So what I was going to talk about was what sort of activities, and then why these activities, what are the benefits, and then a bit about how we can do the sort of accessibility and equipment, and then a little bit about risk at the end. But I've seen from all the displays outside and the slideshows that have been on, lots of pictures of the what, of people doing the activities. So I don't think you need me to tell you about what activities are possible in this session. So I'm going to talk a bit about maybe how we can frame the activities a bit differently, and also what the activities might mean to people, especially with more complex cognitive disabilities. And I'm going to do that by telling you some stories. So I do have some pictures, and I'll be flicking through them. First of all, what do the activities mean? This first came to me, actually, another one of the Adventure for All centres, Bendrick Lodge, which is where we went on a holiday with some of the guys that I worked with. And one man in particular was profoundly deafblind, so no sight or hearing since birth. And we were doing the zip wire activity, or death slide, as it used to be called. And we were there, and we'd got the harness on and the helmet on and everything, and we're standing on the edge, and I'm standing on the edge with him, and I kept trying to sign, and he had maybe 10, 15 signs. And I was trying to explain what was going to happen, that we're attached to this rope, we're going to go down the slide, and we're standing on the edge, and he's a tiny wee man, so I have my arm around him, holding him, and I'm standing on the edge and thinking, this is the moment normally that's scary. This is the big moment for people on a zip wire. Am I going to step off? He couldn't see the drop. That wasn't a magic moment for him. But he felt calm, and I'd explained, so I thought, right, well, let's take a risk. Put my arm around him, held on, and stepped off, and immediately he went really tense, and I thought, oh, Jesus, this is it. And then he relaxed straight away, and on reflection, I think, it was that immediate stepping off. Where's the ground gone? I've got no point of reference anymore. That was the moment for him, not the standing, am I going to take the step, because I can't see and there's anything. And then, where's the ground gone? That's the moment of sort of fear. And then, oh, Joe's there. It can't be so bad. We're going down together. And then we flew down the zip wire, and then we hit the brake at the end, and you go flying up in the air, and suddenly he went tense again. And then we bounced together, and he burst out laughing. And that really led me to think, what are these activities for people with complex disabilities and especially sensory impairments? Are they maybe they perceive them in a different way? And this was highlighted when we started climbing. So we built up, and I could talk all day about how we climbed with this man and the impact of wearing a harness and a helmet for somebody who'd spent a lot of their time restrained when they were younger in a hospital, in a restraining jacket and a padded helmet, and all the issues around that. And if you're interested, a 500-page thesis about how you can develop communication using climbing. But we climbed outside, and that went great. And then we started to climb in the climbing wall inside. And after a while, he would stop getting to the top of the climbing wall, and we would only get halfway up. And I started to think, maybe I'm too close to him when we're climbing. Maybe I'm not close enough. I wasn't sure what was quite going on. And then I started to think, we're never getting to the top. In the climbing wall, you get up and you touch the pulley at the top and then you lower back down. What's the point? What are we doing this for? So for him, I began to think again, what is this activity for him? And what I think was, it was more about swinging about on the rope together and having the control that he could stop the activity. Part of what we did was develop a way that he would sign to me to finish, and he could control whenever we stopped. But it was a bit about how do we develop this activity? And that led into a bit of thinking about how can I frame this? How can I make climbing more meaningful to him? And I started to think about maybe if we incorporate it into a journey, so that we're walking and then we come across the crag and it becomes a big surprise. Oh, how are we going to get up there? We're having our lunch at the top. We need to climb up there. So you're making the activity not just a thing to do, but part of a journey and part of a story.
This was in Norway.
And crashing in Norway, another big experience. I think when things go wrong are often the big things to talk about. When your accessibility scooters break down and you have to push on the way back. And also maybe sometimes we focus too much on outdoor or pursuit activities. And sometimes just a walk, especially a walk when the river's flooded. You know, there's the risk, and we'll talk a bit about that later. But, you know, this was a great fun session and a fantastic walk. And certainly from a communication point of view, we were able to, it was quite easy to explain this activity. You know, we're walking, but it's the same as the bath, but we've got our clothes on. You know, with people who've got less formal communication, sometimes things like this are easier to explain than the canoeing and the climbing and the more formal outdoor pursuits. But what I wanted to get to was big animals, small animals, playing with different material, you know, different textures. Here. This was in Norway, and we went to Norway, and the first time we went, this is a group of Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and Scotland of people who work with the deafblind, and we meet each year, and we go to a different country, and we have a week. And the first year was in Norway, and we spent 5 days we were there, 3 days, me and Peter, the man that's under the reindeer skins, didn't go inside. We were outside for 3 days. And it was fantastic. And he only got grumpy the last night when we went back to the hotel for the meal on the last night. I think because he had to put his shoes on for the first time in 3 days. And also when we were having our meals, I was being really careful and conscious about him spilling any food. Whereas for the last 3 days, I hadn't cared. We both looked minging when we got back. But they have a concept, or more than a concept, the culture in Norway. The part of the culture is called friluftsliv, nature living. And they don't have anybody like me in their deafblind organizations because they're all use the outdoors. They go outside all the time. And I was talking to them about the British outdoor education sort of concept and the way we do activities, where quite often we will drive to a crag and we'll climb and we'll come back and we'll go in the minibus and we'll go back home. Or we'll go to a river and we'll cross the river and then we'll get in the minibus and go back home. And whereas here we'd been outside for 3 days. So the next year when they came to Scotland, I purposefully booked for a day at Badaguish. We booked the ropes course for a day. And it was fantastic. We had a great time. But it was really difficult to explain the pamper pole, for example, where you climb up a big telegraph pole and you stand on a small platform at the top wearing a harness and you've got a rope and then you jump off. How do you explain climb up here and stand on that? And even if you explain it, why? Why are you doing this? In Norway, it was easy. We're spending 3 nights here. We need to put the tent up. We're getting cold. We need to build the fire. We're getting hungry. We need to go fishing, or we need to pick some berries. All the things had a purpose. And there was a storyline to what it was we were doing. And it was easy to explain the activities we were doing. This was really highlighted to me then at another holiday when we did a river crossing. And we sent one of the staff across to set up a Tyrolean traverser. They tied the rope around the tree. And then we all went across the river. And everybody got across the river, about 2 hours of everybody going across on their harnesses and ropes. And then we walked back across the bridge to the minibus. And one of the guys looked at me and said, why have we just spent 2 hours messing around? Now, there's nothing wrong with the activity. Doing those activities are fine. But it wouldn't have taken much to park the minibus a bit further up the road and drop us off one side of the river and walk across the river off to the minibus and then maybe drive a different way back so it's not as obvious that there's a bridge right next to where you've done it. So it's this framing of activities. Now, I know this is for providers. I know this can be difficult. If you've only got people for an hour, it's hard to do a big, long journey. But if you're doing a holiday or a short break, you can build up activities. You can maybe have an evening playing with the harnesses and doing a little bit of climbing at the wall before you then have your walk that you come across the big wall to climb up. Or you can play with the canoes and do a bit of canoeing before you do a big trip. Now, the big trip doesn't have to be the descent of the Spey or, you know, coast to coast or anything like that. You can go to Inchkeilock from Balmaha and have a barbecue on the beach and go back. That's a big trip. or you can go across the bay at Balmahar. It doesn't have to be a big, big thing, but it's trying to get it and work it into a journey or a story. Another sort of way of building up these things is to use projects, I've found, where we can focus on things and focus on trees for the environmental sessions, and we'll collect all different sort of things for trees. And there's a fantastic award called the John Muir Award. I don't know if anybody's aware of it, that I think is a really good way of helping everybody, support workers and me when I do the sessions, and all buy into this project of doing something. So we'll go out and to do the John Muir Award, you have to discover, explore, conserve and share a wild place. And they're really flexible. That's what I like about them compared to the Duke of Edinburgh Award. They're really flexible because that wild place, it can be Greenland or it can be Knoydart, but it can also be your back garden. If that's what's relevant to you, it can be your back garden. And what I like about it is it then isn't exclusively tied to my outdoor sessions. The support workers can carry it on. And that sort of thing is fantastic for a holiday, where you can spend the whole holiday working on a theme and exploring and conserving and doing a job to conserve and share, building up a scrapbook or making a collage of the things you've collected. The last group that we just had got their awards last week, with three guys in St Scotland, we've come up with a new tree classification system. We wanted some way that all the things we collected, that the guys could be involved in working out what sort of trees they are. So now there are two types of tree. There are trees with needles and trees with leaves. And we cut out a wooden shape like a Christmas tree and a wooden shape that's like a, you know, traditional sort of oak tree. And everybody helped sort the leaves and the pine needles and the cones and everything into these two piles. And there's two different types of tree as far as these guys are concerned. And I think from the future, as far as I'm concerned as well. So that's, I think, I hope, giving you some ideas and thoughts about the ways that we can incorporate the activities. So it's not just to do them as standalone things, but try and fit them into a journey or fit them into a story, especially if you're trying to having difficulty explaining the purpose. If it becomes, we need to go, and it's great to build up. If we're going to go overnight and we're going to spend the night on the island and camp and come back. And you can build so many things into talking about the logistics, if it's relevant. What do we need to take? How much food do we need to take? How many people are going to go in each canoe? How many ropes do we need to get up there? And also it becomes big, powerful moments to then retell and stories. So instead of the scrapbook just saying, I went climbing, I went for a walk today, we came across a big crag, we had lunch at the top, and how did we get to the top? And it becomes a big moment, and it can become something that you can develop communication on. Okay. Why? Oh, there we are in Norway still. This was great because we went back a few years later with the same guy that was in Norway the first time in the winter. They've now started inviting us to their winter week, the Norwegians, and we went back to the same place that we'd camped 6 years before. I didn't recognise it, and tactilely it was completely different. One of the things that we were almost concerned about in the summer week when we'd gone was that it was sensory overload. They were sitting on reindeer skins, they were feeling the pine needles and the moss, the smoke of the fire, the way the Norwegians made the coffee with a big pot on the fire, pour the proper coffee in and just boil it. Bits in the coffee, so everything was a tactile experience. And then we went back in the winter, and the ground was all this frozen stuff. Peter likes little bits of sand or little bits of stone, and he rubs them between his fingers. Well, the sand here in the winter, it keeps melting and turning into water. There we go, the John Muir Award. Okay, what are the benefits? I quite often use this continuum when I'm talking and trying to sell to my staff the outdoor activities. It was developed by Gilliam it was used in a mental health setting. It was talking about ropes courses, and I've just talked about how rubbish ropes courses are, but I don't mean that. But this is where this particular continuum came from. But I find it really useful to talk about the sort of range of experiences. So what I'm going to do is work from right to left, that way. Yeah, right to left. So at the one end, we've got, it says there, therapy and clinical and recovery and all that sort of stuff. Normally when I'm doing it with our staff, I'll add education in as well, educational type things. So when you're using the activities for a real reason, with the guys that we work with, it's quite often about communication development and moving beyond functional communication. So moving beyond drink, toilet, bath into the past and the future. I like this, I don't like that. Quite often, certainly with the congenital deaf blind, that's a real difficulty. Not so much, I don't think, a difficulty for them to express, but it's a difficulty for us to understand because they're not using formal signs. By doing authentic, real activities that give real feelings and real meaning, you can then start to talk about yesterday, with the thing we did, and also the activities lend themselves, because they're physical, so they lend themselves to sign. And the equipment, you can talk about the harness and the helmet. so that we can talk about things relatively easy and then start to see what the facial expressions are, what gestures they come up with as to whether they liked or didn't like it. On the education side, there's a million and one things we can use the outdoors for. We can collect different bits of the environment. We can talk about the different types of trees, trees with needles and trees with leaves. We can talk about the different types of, sand. I did a project with one guy where I found that he loved sand. He would, outside his house, he had a box with sand and he would sit and play with it all the time. And I used to go, we'd go to the beach. And that was great in itself because he liked to run. And it was the first time one of the few places that he could just run. He lived up in Dundee and we'd go to Tensmuir Beach in Fife, just up the coast. And it was great, no cars about, and he would just run. And the staff would, we need to go. And I was like, look, what's going to happen? We're on the beach, we can see him for miles. Let him have a bit of space. He's got somebody in his face 24 hours a day. Let him run. And then I was there and I was picking up, I don't know if you've noticed anybody who's been to Tensmuir, the shells there are quite brittle. They've been there, there's not fresh shells coming, they're quite old shells, and they crunch quite easily. So we collected and we got this guy to collect a bag of them. So we took a bag of shells home. And then I brought a coffee grinder and a pestle and mortar and we crushed up the shells. So we got a little square, three square blocks, stuck some full shells onto one block. And then we pounded some up with the pestle and mortar and stuck them on the second block. And then put the pounded bits into the coffee grinder and ground them up. And when he pulled out the drawer and he had sand, he'd made sand from the shells. Now, I'm not saying that he now has a complete understanding of evolution and how sand is created, but he's got an idea that sand might come from this stuff here. And he's got a thing on his wall, a tactile reminder, shells, crushed shells, sand, that he can feel and talk about. And other people can come and talk to him about this and this thing that he likes. He's got a bit more of an understanding of the world just by being outside and experiencing it. Moving to the middle, physical and burns off energy and increased coordination. Obviously, anybody who has a sedentary lifestyle doing any sort of activity is a good thing. And I think the outdoor activities are fantastic because the focus isn't on the activity. It's not like go to the gym, you've got a weight loss program, you need to go to the gym and you need to lose some weight and you're doing the activity and it just so happens that it's physical. And so you're not focusing on the losing weight, you're focusing on doing whatever it is you're doing and you've got that same benefit of being physical. Collecting things on the environmental type sessions, picking up tiny things, it's fine motor control can be developed. And if people are motivated and interested in what they're doing, they're often more able to go for things and pick up things or more interested in trying to extend themselves a bit more and pick up things. And then you've got the big gross motor control, climbing and canoeing, it's all big movements that they're able to develop. However, when I started as a night shift worker, the burning off energy, I could tell when it was a weekend, because all the guys in the house where I was a night shift worker had really busy timetables Monday to Friday, and then they had sort of free time and it was up to the staff to do whatever they wanted on the weekends. They didn't sleep as well, let me tell you, at the weekends. I could tell when it was a weekend without looking at the calendar. So I'm sure any of you who are parents, if you do active things with people with babies, they sleep better. It's not rocket science. So, for guys who have problems with sleep, doing activities that they enjoy, again, without the focus being on the physical, is only a good thing because they get tired. There's a lot of parents who quite like it when I do one-to-one sessions because their children come back tired from my sessions and they get a good night's sleep. So certainly that to me was important when I started. However, it frustrates me often that we have to always try and find something at the right end. We have to show that there's a therapeutic or an educational benefit to the things we're doing. I'm more concerned is, do they enjoy it? Is it an activity they like doing? So for Peter, he liked climbing. So we started to go to the climbing wall every week, although I was telling you about the issues of the climbing wall, but it was an activity he liked. I was more interested in the fact that he liked it than the fact that it was part of his declarative communication program that we were working on. I don't go climbing or mountain biking or adventure racing because it's good for my self-esteem or even because it's good for my health. I do it because I enjoy spending time in the mountains with my friends. That's what I think, and I think people with disabilities should be able to do things because they like them, because they're activities they like. And I'm going to maybe go against what I said about the framing activities and making them a journey, because unless you have a chance to try lots of different activities, you're never going to get to the chance to find out what thing you like. So I think there is some benefit in having the chance to try lots of different things to find the thing that you're into. And then you can start to take it further and make it more of an adventure, even if that adventure is canoeing across a short stretch and making a journey of a short stretch. Unless you've tried canoeing, you're not going to know that you like canoeing. The other thing I like about this continuum and the way it's set out like that is whatever the aim of a session is, it doesn't stop the other things happening. So even if you're working at the right end here for some very sort of formal educational aim or a therapeutic communication development aim, it doesn't stop the activities being physical and having a physical benefit, and it doesn't stop them being fun. And if you're only doing the activities for fun, it doesn't stop the fact that there might be some of these physical or therapeutic benefits. I'll just quickly stop at these two. I'm not a big fan of this, but there is research both on the physiological and cognitive benefits of just being in nature. Now, I'm not 100% sure on all that, but there is research that shows these things. So just being outside can have physiological and cognitive benefits to people. So that's another reason why it's good to be outside, I think. Because we've seen lots about the Adventure for All centres. Lochore Meadows is here with the mainstream providers, with all the adapted equipment. There's a lot of the equipment that the guys from Lochore have got is from Equal Adventure, who make adapted equipment. There's all this stuff out there. I'm going to go through quickly. Adapted wheelchairs, cross-country wheelchairs of different sorts, beach chairs, fantastic for getting into the sea. Not that getting into the sea in Scotland is that fantastic, but adapted bikes, there's one out in there just now. All sorts of different adapted skis. Risk. I'm not going to go through all of this because I don't really have the time. There's a bit at the top I'm going to talk about and another thing. I think people often get really hung up on outdoor pursuits. They're seen as risky and they're seen as activities that are really risky. There is an element of risk, although if I had more time I could talk about the perceived and actual risk and the difference between what the perception of the risk is and what the actual risk is. But the statistics would show that what we're all about to do in a minute and drive home is far more risky. The most dangerous bit of any of the sessions I do is the travelling to the venue. That's the bit where we're most likely to have an accident that's going to be detrimental to all of us. So that's something to bear in mind. I'm a big believer in not doing risk assessment and not doing activities because you've assessed the risk, but doing a risk-benefit analysis, looking at what the benefit is and does that outweigh the risk. You know, if we only did risk assessments, we would probably never cross the road, but the benefit of getting to the other side of the road outweighs the risk of crossing the road. So that's the first thing. And the last thing, I'm going to take a big risk in this sort of audience, but I'm telling you about a story of a Norwegian man I'm friends with, and he works with his nephew. His sister's boy has got CHARGE syndrome, and they live up in the north of Norway. I think he says it's the middle of Norway. It's the north as far as I'm concerned. And he has a farm. He's got Highland cattle and runs a farm and Icelandic ponies. And Tormod, his nephew, helps him on the farm, and he rides the ponies. He's got a dog that leads him on a rope. He wears a belt, and the dog follows Rider Martin, his uncle. And they go on the ice. They go ice fishing. He eats the raw fish, Tormod, all that sort of stuff. And he wanted him to work on the tractor with him, and he was looking. Tractors don't come with seatbelts. And he couldn't find a seatbelt to put on the tractor seat for his nephew to be working with him. And he went to his sister, Tormod's mother, and said, you know, I'm really not sure about this. And her response to him is something that I don't know whether I should say or not, but she said, a boy is not a man until he's broken a bone. And I thought that was a fantastic attitude towards risk. Accidents happen. Things do happen in life. And if we never give our young people, whether they've got disabilities or not, or if we'd never give them the opportunity to try things, make mistakes, get things wrong, not necessarily break bones, but to make mistakes and learn from those mistakes, I think we're doing them a real big disservice. And I think having an adventure, having the opportunities to have adventure, is a big way that we can overcome that and help them. Thank you.